well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad to be with you on the program today. We're going to be taking you back to the NRA annual meetings in Atlanta, talking with Jackie Emsley, who is a firearms instructor, longtime Second Amendment advocate, and a grassroots volunteer. I would say grassroots activist for the National Rifle Association. Also, you're going to hear from Barry Todd, an armed citizen who had to act in self-defense and went through a legal nightmare as a result. He's got a new book about that experience coming out. Had the opportunity to sit down with him in Atlanta. It was a fascinating conversation, and I think you'll enjoy that as well. Also, you know, speaking of the NRA, so the board elections we talked about yesterday, good news for those who want to see a reform. The committee assignments have been named as well, and much to my surprise, and I guess surprise is a pretty good word for it, I am one of the three non-board members who is who's been named to the NRA's nominating committee. So I have to tell you, I've not heard anything officially from the NRA, but NRA board member Amanda Suffolk-Cool, releasing that on social media. So I will let you know what that entails, but again, I am honored to be selected as part of that committee and looking forward to doing my part to help rebuild, regrow, and re-strengthen the National Rifle Association going forward. All right, with that said, let's go back to Atlanta. And one of those individuals who has been, again, involved with the NRA for a long, long time. I didn't even realize, I've known Jackie and Scott Emsley for, almost 20 years now. And it's been a few years that I actually had the chance to catch up with either of them. Scott Emsley, elected to the NRA's board of directors earlier this year. And when I was talking with them, I think it was Thursday night or maybe it was Friday morning, Jackie started telling me this story, and I said, you got to come on. You got to sit down with me and share this with our listeners and our viewers. Sorry, there's Mario the Rooster. He misses you all, too. So it was a great conversation, and Jackie has got both great people. So take a look and a listen to our interview with Jackie Emsley from the NRA annual meetings in Atlanta.
Well, we are just getting started with day two of the NRA annual meeting here in Atlanta, Georgia. And we're going to be talking to a lot of folks sharing their stories at bearingarms.com. And I got to tell you, one of my favorite people, every time I get the chance to see her, I feel more energized. She is one of the most effective and passionate grassroots activists that I know. Jackie Emsley is with us on the program. Jackie, how are you this morning?
Cam, I am overjoyed. I'm here at the annual meetings. This is like our family reunion.
Right. Yeah. And we get out of New York State for a little bit, and you don't have to deal with their gun laws, right?
I moved.
You moved?
I moved.
It has been a while since we've talked.
Yes, I am now, Scott and I are now in the in Free America, St. Augustine, Florida.
Oh, that is fantastic.
So we went from the Socialist Democratic People's Republic of New York State to God-loving, freedom-loving Florida. So we are.
I got to say, that is a huge blow to the 2A community in New York, but good for you.
So actually, I'm still keeping tabs on what's going on up there.
Yeah.
I have maintained all my contacts because they're my family. And I found that I can be in a better position because, so many times New Yorkers are afraid to speak out because of retaliation and retribution and all sorts of really bad things.
Right.
And I don't blame them because I was one of them. I know what it's like. So I can say, here, guys, how would you say this to those legislators or this to those legislators? Well, I'm in a better position where I can assist them. And because I don't have to worry about any retaliation from the New York State government.
Right. We were talking offline. This was yesterday, maybe Thursday night. Boy, the days just blend together when you're here, But, and you said something really important. I mean, the value of showing up, right? And so when we talk about grassroots activism and how we can make a difference, not only at the national level, but at the local level, right? Because we know that this stuff isn't just playing out in Congress. It's not just happening at the state capitol, right? Where it's at City Hall, the school boards, right? County commission meetings. Gun control has gone local as well. And so we need to be able to stand up for our segment rights locally. And I think there are a lot of people who say or who think like, okay, well, I'm going to show up at the next city council meeting. I can show up for these things. But you know, sort of yelling at the people there on the dais, you know, what do I do? How can I have an impact?
Sure. Well, the key thing, like you, like we talked about, I guess, like you said, whatever the A-plus right. was just to be there. Just be there. Be a presence in their midst. It's time for us to normalize wearing our NRA hats, wearing our, you know, whatever gun organization you're a member of, hopefully what NRA is one of them, to normalize being a gun owner again and not to be afraid. If you get catcalls, you just walk away. It's okay, because what good will it do to get into an argument where all they want to do is argue with you? They don't want to learn from you. So that the best way to do that, the best, because when you walk away, you're the winner because you maintain your dignity.
Yeah. Do you think there's value in like changing a single heart or mind? You know, because I think, again, we have this, at least I struggle with this, going into a room, knowing that, okay, most of the people here are anti-gun. I want everybody in that room to be persuaded. And I know that that's not going to happen, right? But is there value in reaching one person in that room,
absolutely
two people in that
there
room?
There is. And do you mind if I tell you that if I tell our
yeah,
shows that story that I told you
yeah.
about just showing up? So it was kind of 10 years ago, maybe, and I used to live in the city of Poughkeepsie, which is about 75 miles north of New York City. So it's what I describe as a little city with big city problems.
Okay.
So a group of well-meaning folks said, well, with all the crime and whatnot, they said, let's put together a community gathering, not a forum, not a panel, but a gathering. And let's talk about how to make Poughkeepsie, the city of Poughkeepsie, kinder, gentler, and more connected, or something like that, but more, definitely more connected. And I'm sure you can imagine the kind of folks that were going to show up. Kind of so I said to my, sorry, a little voice said, I need to be. I'm not sure why I need to be there, but I think I need to be. So what I did was, so I went right after work in my business suit. Holes, heels, business suit, hair up, jewelry, everything. And obviously I didn't look like a gun owner. So, and when I walked in, I made sure I kind of sat off to the side a little bit. Not that I wanted to make a statement. I carry no signs, no banners, no nothing. But just sat off to the side so that I would be noticed. And there was about 250 people in the auditorium, maybe.
Okay.
So the moderator, who was absolutely brilliant, just very neutral, just really good. So she says, well, welcome. This is where y'all go, rash of crime. And she kind of explained why we were there, set the tone. And she says, what kind of communities are represented here? So how about the clergy? So some clergy members showed up. How about community activists? A bunch of folks showed us. How about academics? A bunch of people showed. And she's looking over at me and noticed I haven't stood up yet. So brilliantly, she said, are there any communities that haven't been represented? And here's my chance. So with little butterflies in the stomach, I stood up and I bowed slightly and I said, good evening, ma'am.
That's your race.
And she says, good evening. And I said, I'm from the firearms community.
It won't be.
It'll feel silent. Because silence is golden sometimes.
Right.
And
yeah,
you heard this. And then silence. And then she says, and I said, and thank you very much for having this evening. She says, well, it's great to have everyone here. And I sat down. And she says, our first exercise is going to be to get paired up with someone that you don't know and discuss how Poughkeepsie can be kinder, gentler, and more connected. So, okay, and give me 15 minutes. So, okay, go ahead, go. And this woman that was sitting in the same row that I was, there was about 10 empty seats. She comes running over. She says, ma'am. I said, hi. And she says, I really want to talk with you. She said, when? Not to or at, but when? And I said, sure, I would love to speak with you. She says, I can't believe you're a gun owner. I mean, look at you.
I'm open.
And I say, well, you know what? Gun owners come in all flavors.
Right.
They come in all flavors. She says, okay. And then I could tell by her tone, by her verbal communication and nonverbal communication, that she was really interested in having a conversation, but not an accusatory or inflammatory or confrontational, but more inquisitive. And I could tell in her voice that it had a little dose of desperation. So I said, okay, let me see if I can peel through the layers here and see if we can come up with, you know, what's going on. So, and I said, please have a seat, sit right here. And I turned my body so that we're facing each other. And she says, I'm really scared because my grandchildren live in home with guns. And I said, okay. I said, well, I assume that they're owned legally. You know, I hope so. And if they're not, I would have a conversation, you know, where you can say maybe we should get rid of them. But that wasn't the case at all. So we could just kind of skip over that part. And she says, well, you know, they just have them. I said, okay. I said, have you ever heard of the Edward Eco program? No, what's that? I said, well, it's a program that has a very simple message. It doesn't teach kids how to use guns. What it does, it's an accident prevention program. And the message is very simple. It's, you know, stop. If it's soon and done, stop, don't touch, leave the area until an adult. At least that was the message. Right. Fact that it has been tweaked since then. Yeah. That was the basic message. And she says, really? And I said, yes. And I said, yeah, the NRA put out this program. She was like, what? The what? Yeah, the NRA, National Rifle Association,
which is nice.
And she was like, them? I said, yes. I said, the NRA, despite what you hear on the founder part is, the NRA is really all about firearms education and training and really making our community safe. And she says, I got to write this down. And so she's scrambling for a piece of paper, but I always carry a pad of paper with me.
Okay.
Sorry, Chai, you know, ripped out a piece of paper for her. And the pen that I had was a Friends of the NRA pen.
Nice.
I love it. So I handed it to her. She wrote down the information and took down my name and information too. And I said, yeah, in fact, I introduced that program a little bit in the Women on Target clinics that I teach, which is also part of the NRA. And she was like, you teach women to shoot guns? I said, not only do I teach women how to teach women how to shoot guns, but also do it safely. She says, wow, that's cool. So 15 minutes we're at. She comes back together, and it will come back together. And the moderator, again, to show her brilliance, the moderator said, is there anyone that would like to share what you and your partner were talking about? Now, there must have been like a James Bond, well, press the red button and boost your seat to boost you out of your chair, because she comes flying out of her chair, raises her hands and said, oh, over here. So I'm thinking to myself, now this is going to go really well or really bad.
Right.
But because she and I had such a positive, genuine conversation, I had a feeling it was going to go well. But I did know it was going to go this well. And she says, I just had the greatest conversation with Jackie. I mean, look at her. She doesn't look like a gun owner. But did you know that she actually teaches people how to use guns safely? And she says she answered all my questions. And although I'll probably never use a gun or have a gun, but before I met her, I thought gun owners were just stupid, crazy people. But then I met her. And now maybe it's not so bad. You couldn't ask for better. So meanwhile, I'm kind of bracing myself for cackles or hoots or hollers. The audience said nothing. Imagine that.
Right?
Cool, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. Cool. And who knows what kind of ripple effect that had, right?
Exactly.
Because as you say, she not only had that experience with you, but then she told everybody in that room, hey, you know what? I had that stereotype, and I'm sure there were a lot of people in that room who had the same stereotypical thought, right? Well, gosh, they're all a bunch of crazy weirdos. And then they were confronted with that reality, that woman's reality, right? And some of them probably didn't take it to heart, but some of them probably did, even if it was just a little thought in the back of their mind, right? And you definitely had an impact on her, right?
Sure.
It's amazing.
And all because I decided to go to this.
Yeah. You showed up.
And showed up. And it showed up and I was there. Yep. And I also believe in doing homework before you go. So that in case you do get confrontational, like you're, no one should have AR-15s. Well, do you know what an AR means? Do you know what the AR actually means? Now, like, you don't know what the AR means, but it's in your tone and your attitude. Mm-hmm. A lot of folks just want to have conversations. They don't want to be criticized because they don't know anything about guns.
Right.
You and I, who are in the firearms community, we are ambassadors from the gun community, the law-abiding gun, good, wholesome folk. We are ambassadors to a community who desperately needs our help, but who are afraid to ask because they don't want to be treated like idiots because they don't know anything about firearms.
Right.
So that's where, instead of having protests and whatnot, which are basically noisemakers, sometimes they're effective, most of the times they're not. It's those one-on-one conversations.
Absolutely. And I realize that, you know, I mean, we live in a day and age where it seems like the politics of persuasion just doesn't, you know, it's not as important anymore. But I think that it actually is because, you know, you're right. You're not going to reach that committed gun control activist, right? But there are a lot of folks in the middle who, as you say, they don't know anything about guns. Mm-hmm. And they are, listen, in the gun control crowd, they're happy to reach out to those folks. They want to keep them stupid. Mm-hmm. They want to keep them ignorant, right, and afraid. Mm-hmm. But if we yell at those folks, we scream at them, you're so stupid, you don't know what an AR is, that pushes them into the gun control camp. Mm-hmm. Whereas you can say, hey, you know what, let me answer your questions. Mm-hmm. If you don't know about these things, well, let me explain stuff mm-hmm. to you, right? And not in a condescending way, but anything you want to know about, I can help you, you know.
Help is the big word. Let me help you.
Mm-hmm.
Please give me the honor, the privilege of helping.
Right.
So, yeah. And to any gun clubs or your gun club members, if I can talk about, you know, if I can address the, you know, those folks, I say if there's any gun club members that are gun clubs that or gun ranges or whatever that aren't quite sure how to reach those folks in the middle that aren't quite sure, the NRA is the best place to get started. Come and talk to us, because the Women on Target program changes lives. It changes lives. It provides an opportunity for ladies to come to a range, and a lot of them are terrified. Some of them are just sitting there shaking like a leaf. But by the time we talk with them, in a soothing manner, in an uplifting manner, in an encouraging manner, in a safe manner, and create this environment that they're okay. Nothing is going to happen to them. And in fact, they're going to have the time of their lives. And I've had more than a handful of phone calls from husbands, fathers, uncles, brothers, or whatever, come back afterwards and say, what did you do to my wife? And I recognize that this is, you know, John Smith or whatever. My brother is just in your class. What did you do to her? And I said, excuse me? He said, one day with you, and she's a different person. She's different. And I said, we just did what we do. We do what we do. We provide that safe and encouraging, and we're not worried about personal protection and self-defense, because for brand new shooters, they're not there yet.
Right.
That's one of the biggest mistakes, to push them in that direction. So I said, and he says, and oh, by the way, you cost me $1,000. You're welcome. Yeah, I picked her up from your clinic, and she had already called the gun store, found it on Google Maps, already called the gun store, made them stay open so that she could go get a gun that she just, you know, go get a rifle
right.
that she just shot, that she fell in love with. And she's like, we're going to the gun store. He's relating the story. He says, and she says, go get me a range bag, because I give him a little shopping list.
Yeah.
Go get me a range bag. Go get me a hearing protection, eye protection, a bunch of targets. Yeah. Go get me ammo. Go get this and that. And he says, He says, I was glad to spend $1,000. I've had more than one conversation that says, thank God for the Women on Target program. But I said, thank God for the NRA. Yeah, they came up with this. They came up with this fantastic program.
That is fantastic. Well, Jackie, you keep doing what you're doing, because I think you're just such an amazing activist. The passion is just evident every time we talk. I'm so happy that I got a chance to see you. Congratulations to your husband, Scott, elected to the NRA's board of directors.
Thank you. This is a new and exciting chapter in our long-standing history with the NRA. Yeah, we've been volunteers with the Friends of NRA program almost since inception. Wow. We're both instructors. We do a lot of work with so on and so forth. So there's a lot of things that we do. We're annual meeting junkies, I like to call.
Right.
But this is a new and exciting chapter for us. So we're looking forward to engaging with our members, engaging with NRA members, but we're also looking to engage with former members. Come back. Come back. The tide is turning. When you're looking all around here, people say that the NRA is dying. This is not dying to me.
Right.
And when we go and when we went to the banquet last night and all that, this is not dying. This is the NRA members doing what NRA members do. In every community across this country. So if you left the NRA, come back. I understand why you left, but it's that part of us is behind us, and more of it will be behind us. But come on back, come on back, come back and be with us.
All right, Jackie, thank you so much for joining me on the program. In fact, we got to get up to the NRA members meeting here. But again, thank you so much for joining us on the program today.
Thanks so much, Cam. It was an absolute joy. Look forward to more conversations with you.
Me too.
There you go. The importance of showing up and being there. And again, that applies not just to these one-on-one conversations. It applies to lobbying. It applies to, again, reshaping an organization. We talked about this a little bit on the show yesterday, where there were less than 1,000 votes cast for that 76 board member. Less than 3% of eligible members voting for the board elections overall. So again, showing up, just showing up, because most people won't, doesn't guarantee that you're going to have a big impact, but it certainly increases the odds, right? So as I mentioned, we're also going to share with you this conversation I had with Barry Todd, a gun owner who was unfortunately forced to use that firearm in self-defense. And did go through a legal nightmare as a result. This was an eye-opening conversation. Barry has got a new book coming out. But again, a great conversation. Really appreciate him sitting down and sharing his story, a little bit of a story with us. I didn't want to do any spoilers, so you're not going to hear many details about the incident itself. You are going to hear a lot, though, about the aftermath. Take a look and a listen.
We're continuing our conversations here at the 2025 NRA Annual Meetings in Atlanta. And very pleased to have with us the author of the upcoming book out in June, Stand Your Ground, One Man's Self-Defense Nightmare. Barry Todd is with us on the program. Barry, thanks very much for spending some time with us, sir.
I appreciate you having me on, Cam.
Absolutely. So let me ask you, first of all, is the nightmare over?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Yes, it is.
That is good news.
It took about 9 years, but yes, it is.
Wow. So, well, obviously we don't have 9 years to go through your story, but...
Yeah, it was 26 months of actually clearing my name, and then another, or getting me out of the legal system, then another 7 years to clear my name due to the way the policies are set up throughout the United States, that you're presumed guilty until proven innocent.
I know people are going to say, well, that can't be, but it is in a lot of states, particularly only on this statute, right? Only when we're dealing with acting in self-defense, is the assumption... essentially, that you were the aggressor, right? You committed a crime, and you have to prove that you did not.
Correct.
There are a couple of states that have flipped that. And so it is now, honestly, okay, you are innocent until proven guilty. It's up to the prosecution. That was not the case for you. What state are we talking about?
We're talking Arizona. And it's one of the 28 states that have the justification defense laws on the books. And at the time, it did. But the prosecutor ignored those laws.
Really? And the judge allowed that?
Because a judge does not get involved in the findings of fact until it goes to trial.
Okay.
However, because this prosecutor continued to ignore those laws, my attorney would file what is called a motion to remand it back to the grand jury It got set back four times.
Wow.
Because he refused to show the video or present the self-defense laws for the state of Arizona.
And that's the other thing, right? In a grand jury, your attorney's not in there.
Correct. It's not as a judge.
Yeah. It's the prosecutor and the grand jurors, right?
Yeah. You've heard the term where you can indict a ham sandwich?
Yeah.
That's exactly what it is. And it wasn't until it went to preliminary hearing that the judge actually dismissed the case 26 months later.
Oh, wow.
Man.
And over $500,000 in legal fees.
And a preliminary hearing is, just as it says, that's a very preliminary part of the legal proceedings, but that doesn't mean it happens quickly. In your case, it took almost 2 years.
Most states don't allow preliminary hearings, or they have to be requested by the prosecution in, like it is in Arizona. So when it got sent back to the grand jury the fourth time, the prosecutor actually got mad at the judge after the judge got mad at his and said, well, I demand a preliminary hearing. And my attorney had asked the prosecutor for it previously and immediately jumped up and said, yes, Your Honor, we accept that.
Wow. That is amazing.
And then when it went to preliminary hearing, this is what you're going to love. We had to put on no evidence. The defense had to put on no evidence. Just based on the evidence that they were not including, which is the law,
yeah,
in the video, in when the prosecutor presented his case in the preliminary hearing, the judge dismissed it on that.
That is unbelievable. But again, you're out, what did you say, $500,000 in legal fees at that point?
And then also federally, you're considered guilty. I own a national financial advisory firm, Tim.
Yeah.
Right? The day I was arrested, I had to deactivate my licenses. And even once I was cleared, never went to trial, and it was dismissed with prejudice, I still had to disclose it on every document that I was arrested for a felony. That is the law. Actually, it's not the law. It's the Securities and Exchange Commission's rules. So all these states, and then the states are the same way. You know, if you have licenses in other states, every one of them wants you to disclose it, and you had to write letters. It was a horrible, horrible nightmare again.
I mean, again, I'm so glad that you wrote this because, you know, I think I don't think anybody ever wants to be in a position where they have to use their gun to defend their life. I've never met the gunner who's like, man, I really hope that happens to me one day. But when we think about this, we don't think about all of what you went through, that nightmare. And it really, I mean, again, this was a nightmare, right? That is just, I got to tell you, Barry, I mean, it's heartbreaking to know what you went through. I got to say, though, I mean, talking to you, you sound righteously angry, but you don't sound bitter.
I'm not.
You're not?
No.
Why not?
Because if it hadn't been for my faith in our Lord Jesus Christ, the support of my family, my friends, my clients, my business associates, as well as my ranger training, I would have never gotten through this. And I often, you know, when I was going through, I was wailing at God every day. I'm like, why? And as I got further and further through it, I realized he said, okay, you're in this. Now help the rest of my people. And so I decided to write the book after I finally cleared my name and the records have been sealed, so I don't have to disclose it anymore.
Okay.
Unless I choose to.
Okay.
All right. So I'm doing it now, and all the proceeds, all the profits from this book are going into a foundation that me, my wife, my legal team have started, so we can raise about $10 million, create an endowment, so we can help other people like Daniel Penny in New York. Or George Allen. Because self-defense is self-defense. Whether you have a weapon or not,
Yeah. You
should not, people should not be allowed to abuse you.
Absolutely.
And we need to start helping people.
Absolutely. I realize we have not talked about the specifics of this defensive gun use, and I'm not going to, because I want people to read the book.
Gotcha.
I suspect that our conversation, Barry, has pique people's interests, and I hope that they will pick up a copy. When is this coming out? You said it's coming out in June
20th, 2025. You could start pre-ordering it in about 2 weeks.
Okay.
You can go to standyourgroundbook.com in 2 weeks and start ordering it. Today at 4 o'clock, I'm doing a signing for about 40 books that I brought with me, advanced copies. My publisher told me to start getting out and talking about it. and they gave me some advance copy.
Okay. Will you come back on the show? We'll do something online when the book is actually officially released?
I would love to.
Okay.
That would be awesome. And the key thing is we need to start helping our fellow Americans and doing the right thing and protecting them. The system is upside down.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah. Barry, listen, thank you again for joining us today. Thank you for sharing your story. And thank you for using what happened to you as a way to help others. So I really appreciate your time, man.
I appreciate you. God bless you. Again, go to standyourgroundbook.com.
My thanks once again to Barry Todd for joining me on the program. And again, that book coming out very, very soon. So make sure you get a copy. All right, let's turn our attention now to today's armed citizen story. Our good deed of the day and our recidivist report. We'll start there with a case out of Pennsylvania, where a Norristown man convicted of manslaughter as a teen is now accused of violating parole with his new arrest. By the way, this guy's 20 years old. I find it interesting that sometimes 20-year-olds are grown men. Other times when we're talking about, you know, let's say their ability to purchase and possess firearms, they're kids, right? They're children. No, 20 years old, that's an adult. As a matter of fact, Victor Thomas Bell Jr., who is now 20, was 16 when he allegedly accidentally shot and killed a woman, Diamond Rahat, inside of her home in Norristown, Pennsylvania. That was back in 2021. Bell is now accused of violating his probation on multiple occasions. And some fairly serious violations. It was October of 2022, so a little bit more than, I guess, about 2.5 years ago. Bell, who was then 18, was sentenced to just 10 to 23 months in the county jail after he pleaded guilty to a manslaughter charge as well as illegal gun possession in connection with Rahat's death. At the time, the judge also ordered Bell to complete 5 years of probation following parole for a total of 7 years of court supervision. Bell was 16 at the time of the fatal shooting. He was charged as an adult under state laws that permit those 15 years or older who are charged with certain violent or serious felonies to be automatically tried as an adult. And Bell, again, pleaded guilty to manslaughter at age 18, got what I would consider to be a slap on the wrist in exchange for that manslaughter charge. And now police are saying that Bell has apparently not learned his lesson. He is accused of violating his parole not only by providing police with false information in a car accident last year, but he is now being accused of hanging out with gang members that have allegedly been involved in numerous carjacking and shooting incidents in Montgomery County. He was not supposed to have any contact with gang members, was not supposed to be around firearms or anything of that nature. And on multiple occasions now, particularly over the last few weeks, Bell has, in fact, been caught with individuals he's not supposed to be hanging out with. April 1st, he was charged with dealing in proceeds of unlawful activities, possession of a prohibited firearm, possession with intent to deliver controlled substances, and various conspiracy-related charges in connection with incidents that occurred between January and February during his alleged association with the Grimy Boys, Da Six Street Gang. Yeah, all the good gang names have been taken. County Detective Richard Hoffner, Norristown Detective William Klinger, alleging in court documents that over the past several months, law enforcement has become aware of an ongoing rivalry, being the impetus for several shootings occurring between two factions and homegrown street gangs in Norristown. Those factions are the Grimy Boys, a.k.a. Da Six, and the All Black Bandits, who does not have a pseudonym, I guess. Members of both of these factions, they say, have been actively posting on social media about the ongoing rivalry between these two groups. The result has been a dramatic increase in shootings and violent incidents in Norristown Borough, many of which appear to be targeted violence and or retaliatory in nature. Yeah. So I will just say that all of this, at least for Mr. Bell, could have been avoided had he actually got an appropriate sentence for killing a woman just a couple of years ago. Now, the Grimy Boys might still be beefing with the All Black Bandits, but Mr. Bell would not be involved because he would be incarcerated. All right, on to today's armed citizen story from Illinois. The headline, 79-year-old who shot intruder won't face charges Now, that might be a duh headline for you. Kind of was for me, too, I got to say. But this is Illinois we're talking about here. This was Sunday morning in Kane County, Illinois. It was a 29-year-old man who had apparently been at a party, or what they describe as a gathering, around the corner at another home. He wandered away on foot. I'm guessing he was fairly intoxicated or under the influence of something because he mistook the 79-year-old's home for the one that he had just been partying at. The fact that there was nobody around, that things looked different. Yeah, none of that seemed to have mattered to this guy. So it was just before 9 o'clock in the morning on Sunday. The resident of the home woke up, got out of bed, probably walking to the kitchen to make himself a coffee or something, and found this stranger sleeping inside of his home and did what anybody would do. He confronted the stranger who was asleep in his home. According to police, at some point, a verbal and physical altercation took place and the 29-year-old man was shot, taken to a hospital for treatment. Condition is unknown. Police say that Kane County State's Attorney Jamie Mosser declined to press charges against the 79-year-old man, which again, maybe a no-brainer for us, but this is Illinois that we're talking about. And so it is, I think, worth noting that this 79-year-old who woke up to somebody who was not supposed to be in his house, a altercation ensued, again, acting in self-defense and protecting himself against that intruder. Now, I confess, if I ever have been so drunk that I can't recognize the house that I was at is not the same as the house that I'm trying to get into, it has been a long, long time. And I mean, I don't think I've ever been that intoxicated. If you are planning on getting that soused and leaving your home or leaving a party, use the buddy system. Have somebody who's not quite as soused with you. Because intoxication, impairment, that's not an excuse. You can't say, well, I shouldn't be at fault. This guy is to blame because I got shot because I was so drunk I didn't know where I was. Nope, that's not how it works. And in this case, I think justice has been done. I'm glad the 29-year-old sounds like he's going to be okay. But I'm also glad that the 79-year-old man not facing any charges for protecting himself in his home. Finally today, our good deed of the day in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. A story just a couple of miles down the road from me in Lynchburg, Virginia, where a neighbor's quick action saved a family from a house fire. This was over the weekend. I guess it started Saturday night. Ken Lamb, who is a neighbor, said it was a pretty peaceful evening until he heard his mom yelling that their neighbor's house was on fire. He said he saw flames shooting up from the back porch up about 60 feet. He said it was so intense, the heat. He said, I could feel the heat even out here all the way out on the street. And that's like 40 feet away. He said he could feel the heat and everything. So Lamb ran downstairs, across the yard, pounded on the door of the home, ended up smashing through the glass with his hand. He said, I stuck my head through the glass and yelled. And as soon as I did that, they started to come downstairs. So apparently the family at that point was unaware that their home was on fire. Lamb said the fire spread quickly. He said it was seconds, literally seconds. But a couple and their daughter managed to escape unharmed. Fire department showed up a couple minutes later. Took about an hour to get the fire under control. And the blaze itself, unfortunately, pretty devastating. The home is a total loss. Their dog and cat were not able to make it out of the home. They lost their vehicle, which also apparently caught fire. A GoFundMe says, while they're grateful for getting out alive, they have lost everything. And that is indeed devastating, even with no loss of life. But thankfully, again, because of the quick actions and the quick thinking of their neighbor, Ken Lamb, the family themselves are safe and sound. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. I do want to thank you for being a part of the program, as always. We'll be back tomorrow with one more show for the week, taking you back to Atlanta. I'm not sure, you know, I was going to share Ryan Petty's interview with you today, but then Tom Knighton is writing about his interview with Ryan at Bearing Arms, so I didn't want to double dip. So we might share Ryan's interview tomorrow. We have a lot of great folks to talk to. So either way, you'll hear from a couple of those folks who I had the chance to sit down with in Atlanta, Georgia, and as well as the latest Second Amendment news and information from all across the nation. Of course, you can get that at Bearing Arms as well. In fact, I'd encourage you to check out the website. And if you like what you see, become a VIP, VIP Gold, or VIP Platinum member. Just use the promo code FIGHT. You can get 60% off your membership. You will get exclusive deals. You will get all kinds of great benefits. And you'll also be supporting the independent pro Second Amendment journalism that we're doing at Bearing Arms. So thank you very much. Have a great rest of your Hump Day Wednesday. And we'll see you back here tomorrow. Until then, be well. Be safe. And be free.